Well, thanks to Bill for that excellent overview. Cheers. Right, so anybody want to comment, Richard?
Oh, that's right. The deja vu for me to see Bill entering into the world, which for over 50 years I wasted too much of my life in, and it's good to be brought up to date. I'd just like to make one or two points. First of all, about the use of technology for because of how the cost is hidden. In the time of the SDI program, no research grants were given by the major financiers in America unless for laser research, unless it had a military application. And that must be true of many other, certainly probably in the computing industry as well. And also the way in which we have to be careful when we look at those budgets, because at the time of the SDI, a budget deficit law was passed, Budget Deficit Act, which made it law that every single penny spent on defence and other departments had to be declared. But it wasn't true. There was a fourth department for SDI, which never, ever, to this day, could declare a budget. And it spent huge billions of pounds, which was never declared in any financial exclusion in figures. My interest was really stimulated by Eisenhower's valedictory speech on the industrial military complex. And of course, that cozy relationship still goes on today, where the people in power award the contracts for the new weapons to the big producers, and in turn, when they retire, are given the job on the board of the big producers. And another interesting point is that much of this secret expenditure must still go on. I know for a fact, for instance, that something rarely talked about is a massive budget in the US spent on blurring the line between illusion and reality, which they have hired experts from Hollywood, much the same as the British government used masculine to make a false Alexandria in the Second World War, the conjurer. Another interesting point I would pick up on is the relevance of small arms. I know when I was on my nuclear platform, it was a favourite analogy of the CND to say that the nuclear bomb was the sword of Damocles hanging over our head by a thread that any moment might break. But I always said on my platform, that's not true. It's a sort of Excalibur. It's huge, it's vast, it's massive, it's unwieldy, and it can't stop the ants running up your trouser legs. And that is the relevance of small arms today. But all the talk about the deterrent, in fact, it can deter bugger all. And the last point I want to make is the interesting thing you said about the robot ship. And of course, one of the things that's not often talked about is the vast amount of underwater technology that is already out there. Even in the time I was talking about such things, even when I wrote my little book for schools in 1981, there were already weapons, underwater weapons and mines that could actually tell the different noises made by the different ships, so they didn't attack the wrong target. So really all I'm saying is that when we move into this minefield, everything that seems to be facts and figures is very often not at all. And everything that seems to be new is very often not at all.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of the figures I got were from the Stockholm Centre.
I got mine from you.
Yeah, yeah. So, so their notes on how they achieve their figures. I mean, I think they do say, you know, well, we're guessing and doing the best we can out from a bad job. Because, of course, they're going to disguise and distract. And I mean, one of the things that came to my mind when I was doing the research was during the Cold War. I can't remember if it was the Soviets or the US, one of them or the other would start saying that they've done research on psychics, and they now have, you know, psychics who can do clairvoyance, remote viewing and all sorts. And of course they, you know, if they declare that they're spending umpteen million pounds on this, then the US is going, well, that if they're seriously investing in this, we've got to seriously invest in it as well, or at least say we are. There is this element of, yes, there's the real investment, then there's the phony investment, and then there is the whole vexed question of dual use, and not just you say about research on lasers had to have a military component. Well, now research on prime numbers, because of the value that they have for encryption. I think some of them, there was talk, I don't think it ever actually came to being, but the various algorithms and bits of computing technology could be impounded in the States as technology of national security importance. So you can't escape from this vast network. And like you said, it is a deeply political thing, this relationship between the businesses and the governing elites. The business of BAE bribing the Saudis, giving out bribes, and the Saudis turning around and saying, "Well, you have to drop it, otherwise we'll stop cooperating with you, with your defence, with your intelligence." And so, of course, which means that now part of the British foreign policy is to allow bribes to Saudi government that they wouldn't allow to anyone else, in order for the Saudi government, if it's now official government policy to bribe the Saudis. It's almost out there and open, you know. So, it's part of it that the war is very much a business. Yes. Well, that shut everyone up.
Yeah, anybody else? Peter.
I put my head under the parapet in this one. What about the permanent arms economy theory? Do you think that?
Sorry, I didn't get that.
Right. He's asked, is there anything in the permanent arms economy theory? I think I better stand up for this one. So the theory goes, it's essentially based on a, Adam will correct if I'm wrong, on an under-consumptionist reading of the capitalist crisis. That basically they get so much capital that it can't be invested, or it can't be bought back. And so if the state begins to spend on military, some people say, on military expenditure or social welfare, and they say, trying to make out that, you know, that it could make this choice between welfare, but on non-productive expenditure and final consumption, and that buying arms is a type of consumption, it can basically buy its way out of a crisis. But that's not the case, because the whole point, if we're right that a crisis is caused by an overinvestment or a misallocation of the amount of capital relative to the available profits, all it's doing, in fact, is killing the overall profitability of the economy by taking means of production and wealth and turning it into non-productive areas of the economy. So it depresses profits even more. So, SWP came up with this theory as part of Michael Kidron did, as part of an explanation for the long post-war boom and the welfare state and the arms race. But essentially, it's almost a sort of military Keynesianism. Ultimately, it wouldn't work, because you're basically depressing the profitability of the economy even further, rather than actually realizing profits. That's the fundamental mistake is believing in something called under consumption anyway. Which that's not the problem. It's not that things can't be consumed. It's that there's just too much capital invested. That's what, you know, the short version of what causes a crisis.
Right. Anybody else? I'll send a drone out there to see if I can detect any hand movement. Adam, thank you.
No, we're talking about dual use. Presumably, drones could be used for useful things like transporting medicines to parts of Africa or Asia, or Latin America, which haven't got roads and things like that. I mean, there are all sorts of uses you could make of drones, even in the socialist society.
Well, absolutely. Well, even as I said, I mean, Amazon are talking about using it for deliveries. That is useful. I mean, you know, if they could deliver small packages to a farm somewhere in the deepest rural Wales that could get there within the next 2 hours because you've got a drone flight scheduled, or you could schedule. Then yeah, but I mean, the list is endless of the things you could do with drones and solar powered UAVs, and sort of being low level satellites. There's an earthquake. Go and spot out where the rubble is. You know, look for people with heat sensitive cameras. you know, get the water and the food aid out to them instantly. You know, I mean, one of the big military innovations has been, because of course the big problem the US had with Vietnam was the number of soldiers who died, and so what they probably would have lost about as many in Afghanistan and Iraq, but they've developed highly, got them apart from body armour, highly developed evacuation procedures so that people could be rushed from injury on the battlefield to a medical centre, and basically, okay, they'll be maimed, but they'll live, and there's not as much political mileage in maimed soldiers. So yeah, I mean, the point is that these are all things, and the whole point of the talk is that these are all things that are could be developed and are good and useful for human beings and could be make a beautiful world for us, but that they seem to be also wrapped up in this world of military competition, and that they're being used to create more slaves. And I did have a thought when I was listening to Richard earlier today, and Stephen Pinker's idea that we are now not as violent as we once were. Well, part of it will be because we now have much more technological armies. We no longer need to conscript millions of people into fight and send them all out to fight. Nowadays, these wars can be fought out of pocket change, essentially. I think the figure I found was, I should have wrote it on this bit of paper, it's sort of like $249 a year per person to support the armies of the world, which sounds cheap to us. You know, if we were being told that you have to pay $249, but for people on $2 a day or less, that's about 10% of their income is being spent on military expenditure. So, but relative to the world's GDP, I think it's only about 3.5% of world GDP is now spent on military. Whereas I suspect in previous societies there have been a much higher percentage. So I don't know if that's something to be thankful for or not. But, you know, we can now destroy the world at a fraction of the cost.
What just occurred to me, having seen the comrades fumbling with the Birmingham locks, with regarding my deliveries coming by drone, what will happen with returns? Will I get a thing saying, if you for any reason wish to return this item, please operate this drone in the following manner? And I could imagine the chaos that would ensue.
I think you'd get an app for your phone that would summon a drone. Well, I mean, people are seriously talking about when driverless cars come. You'll just get an app on your phone. You'll go, I want a car. And you'll pull, I want a car from here to here. The car will pull up where you're standing. You'll get in, it'll drive you there, and then it'll take the money out of your bank account.
So it'll be pre-programmed for returns.
Yeah.
I thought it'd already been invented. It's called the bus or something.
The train. Anybody else?
No, my talk's over. Shut them up. I consider that to be my triumph and my splendour.
All right, so another thing.
Oh, yeah.
About, you know, these aircraft carriers that Britain's recently bought. And they're useless, apparently. And the aircraft that they've had to buy to put on them are out of date anyway before they're finished. Can you say anything about that? It seems to be a disastrous.
Well, it's even been argued. It's worse than that, because it's even been argued that nowadays the aircraft carrier is out of date because one bloke on a small boat with a rocket launcher can sink them. It's not quite that bad, but I mean, it's going to get to the point where a fairly cheap missile will take out your aircraft carrier, unless you therefore develop lots of anti-electronic warfare to defend it. That's an example of going from this. From the old big heavy industry version of, you know, 19th century style warfare of dreadnoughts and big ships, it's going to be small nippy ships that are intelligent, or underwater ones, like he says, that can just wander around and do the job. But you need an aircraft carrier for prestige, because it was even mooted that Britain could get rid of both its aircraft carriers, the United States stepped forward and said, well, Britain's talking about taking itself out as a world power. So to be a world power, you have to have an aircraft carrier. China has one now, and they've bought into them. Yeah, possibly when they're obsolete. So actually, I should have probably talked about obsolescence, because I suppose that's the other side of all of this, is that eventually your technology becomes so old it's useless to you. And of course, if you invested early and you've still got a lot of value locked up in your aircraft carriers when other people are building drones that could destroy your aircraft carriers in their sleep, then of course, you know, it'll be tremendously harmful to you.
I've got another point.
Which
is, yeah. We know how pathetic SDI was in the terms of which they described its use at the time. But there are still satellites being sent into space of which we have no knowledge of their content. Do you foresee a time then when the SDI technology, such as it was, will come into play again as we move more frequently into space?
For the record, SDI, I think it was Strategic Defence Initiative, that's what it stands for. Yeah, and that was the famous Star Wars project. And obviously, its immediate strategic value was to say to the Russians, well, look, we're developing a way of stopping your nukes getting through. And I believe that they now do have some anti-missile devices that can fire, and that some of these things are close to autonomous. I think anti-mortar, anti-missile devices are in place in Iraq, Afghanistan and Israel. The technology that allows Google Earth, that's part of the presumably technology that came out of the SDI, because they had their spy satellites up there with cameras that could look down, and they're talking about increasing the resolution. They're going to release photos which you'll be able to see people and manhole covers. It's going to go down to that sort of resolution in high definition. So I think I alluded to that space is going to be one of the big areas, because they're going to have to defend those satellites and anyone who can knock them out. You know, all of this robot stuff depends upon the heavily invested capital of things like satellites, communication technology, computer hardware, and advances in computer hardware. So you need to have all of that. So absent of that, if anyone can knock them out. But of course, that's why they're researching into cyber warfare and other means of protecting this communication tower, because it is going to be so vital. And that's why they're getting very antsy about accusing the Chinese of spying on them, because the Americans accusing the Chinese of spying on them, because they're taking their technology away again. So as I said, you know, that's a big free rider problem that they're going to have to deal with. And I suppose someone hacking your satellites is a similar problem, and all sorts of other, well, unforeseeable things that might happen that I can foresee.
I think there has been some speculation that nuclear elements might already be going up within satellites under the treaties, the outer space, ridiculous outer space treaty that doesn't forbid anything. Nothing, not everything has to be declared, and I believe it's true to say that there are already anti-satellite satellites up there.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, as I say, I mean, partly why one of the objections I have to the campaign to stop killer robots is that they want a moratorium on autonomous weapon systems. Well, if they can, they will. And if they will, they'll lie, if need be, to have them and have them available. So, you know, arms control has never worked, because the whole point of warfare is that there are no limits. You've already said, I have no moral relation to you as a human being anymore. All you are to me is a target, and I will kill you if need be. You know, then how can there really be rules in that sort of thing? And you know, it is war to the knife, and the devil take the hindmost, and all sorts of other cliches. You know, the biggest pockets will win.
Okay, right. I'd just like to thank Bill then for tonight's talk.